CliffCentral.com.
Well, good morning, folks.
Welcome to another episode of Auto Central.
Hope you guys are all well and have had a good weekend.
It was the best.
It was the best.
One of the best.
One of the best. Well, we are officially in our last show of the year. Can you believe 2019 is pretty much done and dusted?
Yeah. When I saw that, I almost shed a tear.
You almost shed a tear?
I almost shed a tear. What am I going to do without seeing you guys every second Monday?
You'll have to see me every week.
Yeah, that's true.
Or just relax.
How's it, Wendy? How's your weekend?
It was good. I actually cut my hair this week. It's inspired by you, George. So,
is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. This is
a short back and sides. All on top.
All on top, exactly.
And it's breezy.
Lawrence doesn't believe in that. He's all over.
Oh, no, there's a very valid reason for the length of my hair.
Uh-huh. You want to share? Please do tell.
Well, yeah, I've got a few more months to go, and then I'm going to cut it all off.
No, you're kidding.
Yeah.
You're taking so long to grow it.
Yeah, because there's some lady out there who's going to need it for a wig.
Okay.
What?
Yeah, dude. You never heard of Locks for Love?
No,
it's a cancer awareness thing. So
wow,
you donate your hair to people who need wigs after having chemo.
Oh,
I love it.
Gee whiz. Yeah. Interesting, Martin.
What is this hair thing you talk about?
Dude, you're just aerodynamic, man. Yeah.
Yours grows down with gravity.
Short sides and no top.
Short sides and no top.
Hello,
well,
George.
How's it? So, yeah, I mean, my weekend was pretty much busy, except I did something different. I had to renew my pilot's license, you know, and all car drivers should undergo this stringent test, if you ask me. You know, every 3 years, my pilot's license expires, number one. And every year, obviously, I have to have a full inspection on the airplane, which is the airplane's license. So I had to redo my pilot's license test, and I passed.
Yeah,
well, congratulations.
Thanks. Since 2007, hopefully I'd never fail, because that means I can't bloody fly, right? Well, let's get straight into it for the news this morning. And the first story we have up is Women's World Car of the Year. By category, it's not the first car, but by category, the urban car goes to the Kia Exceed. Looks a little bit like a Mazda, if you ask me.
And it looks like the result of a one-night stand between a Mazda and a Merc GLA, actually.
A one-night stand.
Yeah, the illegitimate offspring.
I think this is probably the only one on the list that surprises me, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is, it's a given.
Mm-hmm. Well, the family car is the Mazda 3. Surprise, surprise. Mazda 3 seems to be very popular. You know, that whole Mazda crossover SUV lineup seems to be very popular. But haven't you noticed these Mazdas are mostly in red?
Because it's such a beautiful color.
It's the best color for that Mazda.
Yeah.
I've seen it in white. I think it looks beautiful.
And in grey. It's also stunning in
grey. Gray,
but the red shows off its lines that much better.
Do you think people are choosing red, or do you think manufacturers just making red?
They are paying extra for the red.
It's an optional color.
It's an optional.
Fiery.
Yeah, I can't remember what they call it. But it's like 15,000 rand.
Oh, goodness.
Extra to get that beautiful paint job.
To get that paint job.
Yeah. And I think it's worth it.
Okay. Well, the green car in Women's World Car of the Year 2019 goes to the Kia Soul EV. Women choosing EVs, I see. Kia Soul, but this one looks like a little bit of a little bus.
Oh, it always has.
Yeah, the Kia Soul. It's a bit of a half loaf.
Yes. Yeah. It looks like a Breton.
Well, that's what makes it popular.
A Breton?
Yeah. Practical. And also,
I suppose square cars have got more space inside, right?
That's the thing. Yeah. And also, Kia has some very good experience already with the first generation.
Here's a surprise for me: luxury car is the BMW 8 Series. I would have, from a Women's World Car of the Year point of view, a BMW 8 Series. It's a coupe, 2-door, and luxury. Oh, there goes the lights. We're in darkness.
That's calm.
got okay. suddenly romantic inside. Anyway, BMW 8 Series goes to luxury car segment goes to BMW 8 Series, and then performance car Porsche 911. Surprise, surprise! I'm not surprised, but Porsche 911 takes performance car in Women's World Car of the Year, and SUV crossover goes to the Range Rover Evoque. Also, not a surprise for
not
me.
Not at all.
Yeah, not
Range
a surprise.
Rover Evoque. What cars do you think are missing from this list?
A Mercedes. Any Mercedes.
What do you think? Why do you think Mercedes is not popular amongst the ladies?
I'm not sure why it's
not,
popular
in general.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it's not popular, but it didn't win Women's World Car of the Year.
No, I agree with you, Wandy. I think the Mercedes B-Class should probably have been the family car of the year.
You think so?
Yeah.
Or the GLE.
The new B-Class is beautiful,
yeah.
And so is the new A-Class.
Yeah,
you know, the old A-Class looked like a half a loaf of bread as well. So anyway, on the next story, Isuzu invests 1.2 billion rand to build a new Bucky in South Africa. So now, are they taking on Ford?
Well, with that kind of investment, there's a strong possibility that...
Remember we spoke about the secondary suppliers to the from the component industry.
Yeah.
So Isuzu's bringing the fight, which is nice to see. Investment in South Africa, 1.2 billion rand, and we're Bucky Nation. So this makes absolute sense. And when we get onto our last story for the news segment, it's very interesting. A story I read over the last couple of days around the Bucky producers in the world and how a certain Tesla could disrupt them because they're so reliant on their Bucky production that they can't let go of it very easily. But Isuzu investing in the country seems to be they're bringing the fight to Ford.
This makes an interesting question. Now, the next generation Mazda BT50 will be based on this Isuzu as well, instead of on the Ford Ranger. So I wonder if they built the BT50 in South Africa on the same line.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
It's a continued trend. Eh?
We've spoken about this before, and that manufacturers will continue to, or should I say more so in the future, share platforms because cars are going to potentially come down to software, and it's going to be, bless you.
Thank you. That was a cough, but thank you.
Oh. Why was it so violent? it's going to come down to being an appliance. That's what cars are going to come down to being is an appliance, and software upgrades and features and no buttons, which means that styling will become more bland inside the car and everything will be on a screen potentially, which means that different software providers and different configurations the car can change inside all the time, especially with different LEDs and lights.
We're actually already seeing that, Volvo and Mercedes-Benz specifically, where I can definitely track from the same basic hardware how the software evolves between models and new releases.
Mm.
So that's already happening.
Now, the next story is this Lyfty app. It's Uber's ineffective safety culture blamed for driverless car crash. Sure. Before we get to that, this Lyfty app that we spoke about last time, is that thing proving to be successful?
So after we actually talked about that story, I never saw anything afterwards. I've been trying to see if there's any traction on it. So I think we're going to have to wait a little while until... it's a thing. I don't know how you guys.
You haven't heard anything yet. All right. Well, nonetheless, then let's get onto the main runner, and that is Uber will contribute to more transport pollution than anything else. A solution, or should I say, a study shows. Why is that? Is it because they're using ICE vehicles, or I can't believe that they can contribute to transport pollution when they're actually driving ride sharing.
You tell us, because I also read this and I wanted to figure out how is the study being conducted, like what are they basing it on?
Isn't the point basically that instead of buying their own cars, people now use this ride sharing service, but they still get from point A to point B, and that still results in a certain level of pollution?
It could be, as opposed to what, taking a bus with more people in it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, at the moment, most of the cars you see on the road have one driver in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the person in the driver's seat and that's it. Whereas if there were lift clubs and multiple people in a car, that could reduce pollution. I just don't see how this study is proves anything. I mean, I'd be keen to understand what the underlying driver is, because, excuse the pun, but how can Uber be contributing to pollution that would be there anyway? For me, this would be a sunk pollution, because that pollution would be there anyway if that driver was in another car, or should I say that rider was in another car driving it himself.
Yeah.
It's the same pollution, right?
If you look at Uber's long-term plan, you know, they are focusing more on, you know, driverless as well as electric vehicles. So I think eventually this won't even be a conversation, because they're going to establish the fact that you have to have an electric vehicle to be a driver.
This sounds like a study that somebody dreamed up just to stir up the hornet's nest. Well, for the sake of...
You know. For the sake of it. Exactly. Well, let's move on from that then. And Uber's ineffective safety culture blamed for driverless car crash. Now, here's an interesting one. Obviously, Uber and the rest are testing these technologies. And inappropriate actions of both an automatic driving system as implemented and the vehicle human operator was showing symptoms of a deeper problem, says the chairman of Mr. Robert, citing that the ineffective safety culture that existed at the time of this particular Uber crash. Now, you know, we've heard the story with Tesla, and this thing happened in March 2018, so it's quite old, and now it's surfacing again.
I saw some photos of what happened here. So the person who was essentially, this was a Volvo that was driving. And the human inside is supposed to just negate anything that the car doesn't pick up, right? And she was on her phone the whole time watching, like, The Voice or something.
Was it The Voice?
It was literally they cited it as The Voice. It's crazy. And I think it was a fault by the person who was crossing the road and the person who was supposed to be watching the car. Because she wasn't watching the car and the person who was crossing the road was not in the pedestrian crossing. She just ran across the road. So I don't know. I don't know who's to blame.
And then on top of that, I see that Uber deactivated the Volvo's automatic emergency braking for the purposes of their modification.
Yeah, but I suppose my point is, what extra have we found out now that the story is resurfacing again? Or is it just a recycling of the same old story where the driver wasn't concentrating on the road, her attention was on her phone, etc., etc.? You know, is the person who got hit now being blamed?
I think it's the person who was supposed to be watching the car.
Yeah.
The safety driver or
the remote safety driver or the actual driver in the car. Yeah, but I mean that we've established already, right?
Yeah.
It's squarely her fault, isn't it?
I think it just reiterates the fact that we still have quite a long way to go before we get to the point where cars can be considered fully autonomous.
Yeah. I mean most of these autonomous cars like Tesla issue a warning to say you can't drive this car. You know, it's not autonomous. It's assisted. Mm-hmm. It's an assisted driving feature. It's not an autonomous autonomous car per se. So, you know, sad situation. But anyway, now here's a big story that I watched this video over and over and over again, and I can't understand whether this is a PR stunt or whether this is actually real, and that is the Tesla Cybertruck.
I think Elon's been into the green wacky tobacco a little too hot.
It could have been a PR stunt. I wouldn't be surprised if I
wouldn't be either.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be either. My biggest question here is, how much did his 4-year-old son get for designing that car?
I think it's the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I love Tesla.
As ugly as the truth.
Freaking hell. I mean, if this is prototype number one, fine. But I think this is prototype number 0.5.
But I mean, you see how many people ordered it after 2 days of after the launch?
Were those real orders? Because I've heard that it's just people saying they want it.
Yeah, of course.
Real orders.
I would not... I still want a vehicle that looks like a vehicle and not something out of an 80s video game.
I know, right? This brings to mind the very first Lara Croft movie.
Mm. Yeah.
It's beautiful inside. Have you seen it inside? Yeah. It's beautiful inside. I mean, it's really proper inside, like Tesla usually does. But the outside looks horrendous.
And my question is, why then not just make it an SUV if you can't load anything into the load bin from the side in any case?
Well, maybe it's supposed to go to the military. It's supposed to protect the guys with guns lying inside the back of the buggy.
Look, I think a lot of this Cybertruck is PR speak.
Well, that's what I'm wondering if, you know, is this an elaborate PR stunt? But I think it's a dumb PR stunt because Tesla's shares fell.
5.5%.
Yeah,
the
moment this particular event happened and the mishap happened with the windows, just to put everybody in the picture, Tesla revealed their Cybertruck at a launch and proceeded to hit the side of the truck with hammers and throw what looked like a metal ball at the windows. And apparently the car is supposed to be bulletproof. And when the metal ball hit the first window on the front left-hand side, the window proceeded to just shatter. Well, so it didn't fall out, but it was seriously damaged. And then Elon said, "No, I'm going to go for the back window." This wasn't supposed to happen. Did the back window, and the exact same thing happened again. Yeah. So
all his dreams have been shattered.
Hence why I'm saying the man's been into the wacky tobacco again.
So it didn't go through the window. Supposed to be bulletproof. This Cybertruck goes for $39,900, does 0 to 100 in 3 seconds.
If you're prepared to pay $70,000.
If you pay $70,000, you can get 3 seconds, but you probably can get 4 if you pay 39. So I'll stick with 4, thanks. And Elon says that this wasn't supposed to happen. All of their tests, they threw wrenches and shovels and who knows what at this car.
They threw a sink at it at one point.
You know what? They could just sell it as is to the movie theaters because that thing looks like it would be perfectly at home in
a
Batman movie or a post-apocalyptic.
Yeah. Futuristic
dystopian thing. Yeah. Yeah. Mad Max, your car is ready.
Exactly. Blade Runner 2021.
Mm. Well, that's our news for the morning and ending with the Tesla Cybertruck. Next is our Auto Talk segment where we are going to have the new Renault Kwid Climber reviewed by Lawrence.
All right.
Is that the thing parked outside?
No. The Renault Kwid.
Because that thing parked outside is strange coloured.
Yeah.
Strangely coloured.
We'll get to that in a second. All right. So, entry-level hatch market. It's been really, really busy the last few weeks. We've had Honda Atos, the Renault Kwid, Datsun Go. Manufacturers just launching these things out the wazoo. This is the cheapest car segment in the country. So the Renault Kwid has been the butt of many a joke for a number of years ever since it was released. When the first generation hit our shores, it was officially, as labeled by all of my colleagues in the industry, the worst car ever made. It had no safety features, no driver aids, no assistance, no nothing.
And it was made of recycled Milo tins.
Yes, it was horrible.
And isn't this the car with the bumpers around the side of the doors?
No.
Or the previous version?
Was so, an old Citroën.
Citroën.
What has happened is every time Renault brings one of these, because they've had a number of re-releases over the last few years, and every time they bring one of the re-releases, they fix all of the stuff that everybody was complaining about. So
what's wrong with that?
Well, we're getting there, and this is the point. What I'm trying to make is, you know, when the car first arrived, we hated it, and Renault said, "Okay, well, let's go and fix all the stuff you complained about." Which they did. They brought it back, and we found more stuff to complain about. And then they fixed those things. And now what you have is the entry-level hatch in our market that sells the most cars per month in the segment. They moved 1,000 of these last month.
Mm.
The people that they're aiming the car at are the type of people who don't really care too much about the stuff that bothers motoring journalists. These things are selling hand over fist. So starting on the outside, lots of different colors. They're really funky, really cool. Thing now has 14-inch wheels on it. They have, as far as I understand, the rumor is that they have bettered the safety cell construction, better quality steel made that they've made the body out of. It now has...
Are these all things people were complaining about?
Yes.
That we were complaining
about. We were
all
complaining about that. Mm.
So they've now have a driver and a passenger airbag. It has TCS and ABS. TSC.
Traction control.
So it has traction control, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm.
For what?
They've the boot size has gotten smaller because they've had to put in a full-size 14-inch spare wheel. Other than that, they've updated the car and made it the best that it can be. Now, the people that are buying these cars are, of course, tech-savvy young people who, you know, they don't care what the body is made out of. They just want to know that it has two airbags. If they crash, they're going to be safe, that it's not going to break down on them, and they have their car becoming the extension of their cell phone, which is what Renault really has concentrated. The biggest selling point of this vehicle right now is the fact that it is an 8-inch touchscreen with Apple CarPlay and interconnected apps, Android Auto.
So they've done quite a bit of work since the last iteration.
They have. I had the pleasure of piloting it around Johannesburg, and I must say, it has gotten incrementally better. It's still nowhere near a Mazda 3, let's be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But at the price that it's coming in at and what people are getting for their money, you can't fault Renault. You know, we can make all the jokes we want, but the only ones who are laughing is Renault all the way to the bank.
Last week we did the 108s. Would you say it's better than the 108s, the Peugeot? Because that's the same segment, right?
It's in the same segment, but that segment is split up into different levels. So you have really, really, really entry-level cars like the Mahindra KUV 100, which as far as I understand is still the cheapest car in the country by a few cents.
One of the worst.
And then on the upper end of that, you have the premium side of the entry-level. So things like the Hyundai Atos, the Peugeot 107.
108.
Sorry, 108.
Volkswagen Up.
To Volkswagen Up. Mm, okay. So they are over 185, where this is coming in at, I think for the CVT, well, sorry, for the AMT Climber, which is the top spec that you can get for this vehicle, it's like 170 grand. So, you know, 174,900 for, and the sales figures don't lie. Latest results show that this is the fourth best-selling passenger vehicle in the country behind Polo Vivo and Corolla Quest, I think.
So is it so bad then?
Well, not anymore.
You know, I say, enough. As motoring journalists, we're used to very well-built, well-made cars that, you know, you can feel good about.
Yeah.
I think the lingering doubt with the vehicle is because of what
the legacy.
And I can honestly tell you that it's still not as good as it could be, but at the price point and what you're getting for your money, it is the best in class at the moment,
and it looks good.
Shortly followed by the new Datsun Go CVT, which I drove last week Thursday.
Which brand is leaving us?
They're not. I asked the general manager for the country, and he said that article was out, but they are not going anywhere.
Well, until it stops getting made, right?
Yeah.
So they are leaving us. It's just a matter of...
Until the new CEO says enough.
Tick-tock.
Yeah.
Could be in 2 years, could be in 5.
Yeah, you know, fair enough.
It might just as well be rebranded as a Budget Nissan.
Datsun Go. Budget Nissan.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, a budget Nissan, because it's supposed to slot in.
Everybody get your tinfoil hats up. So anyway, look, I would say that for a young upwardly mobile person who's just left uni, who needs a car,
sense.
This is probably the best that you're going to get for your money.
Or they could buy a Suzuki Celerio, which comes with everything except a touchscreen and nav for less money.
And that's the thing. As for standard specification for your money, the Quid is still the best.
Well, I mean, if you think about the millennials coming through now, they only care about the tech.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's why
they only care about
so
the tech.
Well.
And that nav. And
Apple
screen.
CarPlay and Android Auto is a big freaking deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. So I'd be very interested to know what the thing is that's making this car sell. You know, surely it's not all of the safety features only.
I'm going to tell you
what the price point.
You buy this car, they give you your first year's insurance.
Yeah.
Not subsidized. Okay. Not, well, we have to put a tracker in and, oh, you have to do this and you have to report here. No. They pay your first year's insurance, mahala. Your first year of insurance on your car is taken care of.
Oh, wow.
And you also get also a comprehensive service plan
your
and
your insurance or their insurance?
No. Your insurance. Your,
oh, so they pay you for whatever insurance company you're with.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, now, the vehicles like the Datsun Go, they offer it too, but it's subsidized. So we'll pay a portion of it.
Ah.
These guys, they take care of the whole thing. And then, of course, you get the warranty and the maintenance plan. And you
so it doesn't matter where you live. Doesn't matter whether you park the car outside. Doesn't that insurance premium will be covered.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow. So there you have it. Thanks, Lawrence. Appreciate that. New Renault Kwid. Go out and have a look. Top seller at the moment. The 1 liter going for 144,900 and up to the 1 liter Clima AMT going for 174,900 rand with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto and free insurance for 1 year. That's a whole 12 months, in case you were wondering what 1 year stood for.
Now we and that actually makes it the cheapest, well, self-shifting cars. I loathe to call that AMT an automatic, but it actually makes it the cheapest car to buy new if you really hate working a clutch. So there you go.
Yeah. Auto new. There we go. So go and so not only does it give you free insurance for a year, it is 174,000 rand at the top end. Plus, it's got Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, as well as it comes in automatic, which is not a heard of thing at the lower segment very much.
No.
Then moving on to the next piece, which is the Auto Trader South African Car of the Year competition. And we have a list of qualifying cars for 2020. And that list of qualifying cars, the full list, can be found on Auto Trader's website. So go and have a look. But very quickly, and you know, in no particular order, the Audi A1, the Audi Q3, the Audi Q8, the BMW 3 Series, BMW Q4, BMW Q5, BMW Q7. X4. I misread that. Thanks, Martin. X4, BMW X5, BMW X7, BMW 8 Series, BMW Z4, Citroën C3 Aircross, Citroën C5, Citroën C3, Ferrari F8.
Tributo.
Tributo.
I'm even surprised to see a Ferrari on this list.
There's one in the country.
Anyway, it's so good, it's here.
Ford Everest, Ford Mustang, Ford Ranger, Ford Ranger Raptor, Hyundai Santa Fe, Hyundai Atos, Jaguar I-Pace. Yes. I'm glad the electric car is in this one. Land Rover, Range Rover Evoque, JMC Vegas 5.
Vegas, it's a Bucky.
Bucky. Kia Sportage, Lexus US, Lexus RCF, Mahindra XUV 300, Mazda 3, Mercedes-Benz X-Class, Mercedes-Benz B-Class, Mercedes-Benz A-Class, Mercedes-Benz CLA, Mercedes-Benz AMG 63, Mercedes-Benz GLE, Mercedes-Benz AMG CLS 53, Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross, Mitsubishi Triton, Peugeot 508, Peugeot 108, Porsche Macan, Porsche 911, Renault Koleos. Subaru Forester, Suzuki Swift Sport, yay. Suzuki Ertiga.
Sorry.
Toyota Corolla Hatch, Toyota RAV4, Toyota Supra, and VW T-Cross. So there you have it. The qualifying cars for Auto Trader South African Car of the Year 2020. So go on to Auto Trader site. There is a lot going on in Auto Trader South African Car of the Year at the moment, and we're just starting the momentum. So I'm looking forward to this Car of the Year, and I hope you are too. Follow us, and let's see where this goes. But into our next segment, which is our industry talk segment, and we have the October new and used car sales numbers, and what I want to do in this segment is put them side by side. So we have the top 10 used cars and we have the top 10 new car sellers. So if we just put them side by side, top 10. So let's go for the top three new car. Toyota Corolla at 13,900.
Ubers.
Ubers.
I think worldwide it's the top selling car. Eh?
Yeah, it is Toyota. Well, I mean, the whole of Africa is painted red with Toyota. You should see Toyota penetration. VW S8 9,527 and Ford at 4,649 cars sold for the month of October. Juxtapose that against used cars sold, and VW Polo is the one that comes out tops, with the Ford Ranger Bucky being second and the VW Polo Vivo being third. So Toyota not in the list of the top three, but enters the list on used car sales for October at number four, with the Toyota Hilux coming in at number four with used cars, and the number four is the Nissan at 3,536 cars. So that's it's the top used car sold against the top new car sold. And if you want to go and have a look, go and have a look on Autotrader's site. We'll have written something about this, and you can go and have a look at the top 10 used cars sold. But what's interesting is that the VW Golf is ninth. I'm surprised that the VW Golf is down to ninth for used cars. Why do you think it's slipping?
People still want to drive a VW, but they want to save some money, so they trade down to a Polo.
Yeah.
Trade down from a VW to a Polo.
From a Golf to a Polo.
Yeah. Mm. You're staying with VW because you love the brand.
Yeah.
You're just trading down to a slightly cheaper car.
And essentially, the new Polo is just a slightly smaller Golf.
Really? Yes. You're quite right.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, they're not actually giving up very much by moving from a Golf to a Polo. The interesting thing for me will be to see the impact of T-Cross sales on the Polo.
Well, I my review for T-Cross is up on site, and I finished off that video by saying, with everything that the T-Cross has to offer, why would anybody buy a Polo now?
You see.
I honestly think that is probably the best car that was released this year.
Even at its price points, I think.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, right? Why go for Polo?
Yeah. Why go for Polo? Because people love Polo. But T-Cross, I mean, you've got a little SUV thing.
Yeah.
And then in terms of appetite, so consumer consideration, we measure the top 10 searched for brands. And BMW is still up there as the top most searched for brand at 3.9 million searches in October 2019. But it's, you know, don't put BMW up there without considering VW, who is on its heels at 3.7 million searches. So, you know, VW is not badly off, and Mercedes-Benz coming in at third with 3.475 million searches. So, and then we drop a whole million searches down to Audi. But remember, Audi's part of the VW stable. So if you had to add Audi and VW together, BMW actually comes in second.
Yep.
Because Audi is really just a next level VW, isn't it?
No, only in the lower model ranges.
But what I'm saying is,
from A4 upwards, they're actually unique cars with no equivalent Volkswagen. But I think South Africans love their BMWs more than they love their Audis.
Not surprising for me in this list is number 10.
Mm-hmm. Porsche.
Yeah. Hmm.
Aspirational, a little bit.
I think it's definitely the aspirational aspect,
and it's an everyday supercar or sports car. It's an everyday sports car. That's what I think the Porsche is. I love Porsche, but it's an everyday sports car.
At the same time, though, if you look at the top sales for that segment for coupe specifically, Porsche is one. It's also in the top 10 most sold. So maybe aspirational in terms of people searching, but people are actually buying them as well in South Africa. So
yeah. That's true.
That's something to consider.
And then in terms of our country, we have the landmass that is nine times the size of the UK. So consider that in the following. The most sold car variant in South Africa by province, seeing as we've got this massive landmass. And in Limpopo, it goes to the Ford Ranger for the month of October. And in Mpumalanga, also the Ford Ranger. In Gauteng, the VW Polo, no doubt. KwaZulu-Natal, also VW Polo. Free State, VW Polo. In the Eastern Cape, again, the Ford Ranger. In the Western Cape, the VW Polo. In the Northern Cape, surprise, surprise, the Toyota Hilux is the most sold used car or used vehicle. And then in the Northwest is the Ford Ranger. So it seems like VW Polo and Ford Ranger kick everything else's butt.
Dominates
in terms of regional sales, except for the Toyota Hilux in the Northern Cape. Now, what do they farm in the Northern Cape that the Toyota Hilux would be so unique?
Sheep.
Ah, so Toyota is
and
a sheep
grapes,
carrier.
You know, it's it goes back to that that advert with the boxer dog with the teeth.
Yeah.
This is, ooh, I'm a sheep. I got lost. What a chop. Remember that advert?
Well, no, I don't. I mean, maybe on the southern part of the Northern Cape, there's grapes there, Martin. But
Orange River Valley is actually quite a large producer.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, fair enough. Anyway, but something in the Karoo likes the Toyota.
Yeah.
And then used cars sold by body type, and surprise, surprise, the most sold body type is still the SUV.
With the Toyota Fortuner sitting right at the top.
That is it for our industry segment. Let's get on to our next segment, which, if I can find my screen, is our Tech Talk segment. And today in our Tech Talk, blind spot technology. 14-year-old science fair winner just solved blind spots. Now, this is interesting because when you're looking around your car, how many or how often are you not able to see something and you have to peer around a pillar or you have to turn your head? Now, this 14-year-old seems to have solved this problem using what I'm assuming is fancy cameras.
Yeah.
Well, this is a very good proof of concept. And I don't know if you remember the old James Bond movie where he drove
the
Aston
car.
Martin vanish.
Yeah, just by bending light.
Yeah. Now, this is...
The cameras play back onto
The car. Now, this is essentially the same kind of idea.
Yeah.
And I think this is a brilliant, brilliant plan because with increasingly stringent safety regulations, roof pillars are going to get thicker and thicker and wider and stronger.
Well, don't you think we'll reach a place in the future where we have less glass and more camera technology? So it looks to me like how this thing works is there are cameras in that pillar that or around that pillar that see what's on the side of the car. So that's the windscreen pillar, the thing that holds the windscreen in on the sides. There's cameras on the other side of it, and then there's a projector inside the car. And that projector projects the images that that camera sees onto the pillar of the car, so it makes as if it's translucent. Mm. That's really as simple as it gets. I mean, very smart idea, but it's quite a simple concept if you ask me. With this kind of technology, do we see a future where glass becomes less and less and less and screens and projectors become a thing of the future?
I hate the idea, but I think it's inevitable, and I think we're already quite a way down that road.
Yeah, I think one of the luxury cars I drove this year had a very, very comprehensive heads-up display, which is the little camera the little screen that projects onto the windscreen just above the driver's.
Oh, BMW's had this for years, right? Yeah.
This one, it was probably about the size of an A5 page, and it had the road signs, the speed, your lane departure, it had the fuel gauge reading. It was a very, very large heads-up display. It wasn't just your speed reading and proper.
And it's high resolution as well.
Yeah.
So
just don't wear
polarized
sunglasses because you can't see anything.
Well, I bought myself a pair of polarized Ray-Bans about 2.5-3 years ago, and I got into my aircraft and took off. And while I was flying, I was like, "What's happening to my instruments?" Because all of the LCD screens that were in the dash, some of them are traditional analog gauges, but some of them are LCD screens.
They're all black.
And I was like, "It's all black." I couldn't understand this. Took the glasses off, and there they reappeared.
Yeah.
And it was the polarized lenses. I then bought myself a pair of unpolarized Ray-Bans to fly in.
Otherwise, but you have to tilt your head through 45 degrees to see anything. That's correct,
yes. And if you tilt your head the other way, so if you can see it up straight and you tilt your head the other way, it disappears at certain angles.
Yeah.
So yes, polarized lenses do make them disappear. So yeah, don't drive. I suppose this technology means that the sales of polarized lenses might just fall.
Yeah, just ruined Ray-Ban's market.
So a very interesting concept. Let's see if it flies in the future, for lack of a better pun. But I would imagine the shaking around on the road and the projector has to be quite stable, otherwise you're going to get this. I mean, have you ever put a GoPro on your car or on something that you do, and you get that shutter.
Is this the same as the tech that you find on some, I think it's Land Rovers now, with the rear?
It shows it can actually show you what's underneath the engine. There's cameras underneath the car that play back on the screen inside to show you what you're driving over.
Yeah.
But now the next step in this technology, and the inventor already says this, they want to use high definition LCD displays because foldable displays have now become commercially viable.
True.
And then they can actually shape these displays to fit the seat pillar, and then they won't even need a projector in the roof anymore.
Well, then you've got an LCD display, which is probably an LED display, which is much better than a projector, because you don't have to project the light. Because what if your head gets in the way of these projectors?
Exactly. So with this, I mean, there won't even be a need for that, and it will effectively render the roof pillars invisible.
So when is the end of wing mirrors then?
Well, many manufacturers...
E-tron doesn't have them. It has screens.
Yeah.
There's a few cars.
Many manufacturers want to move away from wing mirrors.
But not even having the wing mirror on the outside.
No.
Having the wing mirror on the inside.
Yeah.
Well, or should I say
They have a display on the inside where the wing mirror would normally have been. Yeah. And then there's just a little stalk with the camera.
Because if you notice, the Tesla Cybertruck didn't have wing mirrors.
Because it fell off.
Because they couldn't finish the 4-year-old's prototype in time.
All right, well, then the next story is, in my opinion, uninspiring. The look at the new electric Ford Mustang called the Mach-E. Now, if you want to put the word Mach in anything, right, make sure you're faster than a Tesla.
We haven't seen how fast this one is.
Oh, yes.
It's completely unnecessary.
What, I think my this comment?
No. the Ford Mustang Mach-E. I think this is just Ford flexing, saying, "Hey guys, we're doing something. We have an electric car too. Look."
No, I mean, fair enough. But is it faster than the muscle car V8?
No.
Yes. Lots faster than the V8. The thing is, I think...
For about 6 seconds and then the batteries go flat.
Yeah, well, let's not go there. That's an
easy problem. Wait a minute. Am I taking crazy pills?
He's converted.
Are you...
Yeah,
I understand.
Yes,
I'm actually defending this electric Mustang. I think Ford's busy spinning off the Mustang as a separate brand.
So the Ford Mustang V8, for everybody's information, goes 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 3.9 seconds.
Yeah.
This thing is not that much quicker.
That 3.9 seconds is mostly wishful thinking unless you're looking at the Shelby GT500.
Fair enough. But still, this Mach-E is not that much quicker.
It has 5 seats and a boot. And it's electric, George. You have to love this.
No,
you of all people have to love this.
But it's a Mustang. The Mustang has to be, I don't know, muscly.
Why does this thing look like an SUV?
Why does it look like a Tesla?
It looks like a Tesla. It does look like a bit like a Tesla. So anyway, we're having a laugh. But you know what? Good for Ford, because electric vehicles are the thing of the future, and they're trying to take a legend into the future, which is commendable. I mean, the 1964 version of this car is still as popular as the Lone Ranger. So. You know, I think it's good.
And there's another reason.
Can
here
I
as
add
well.
Something?
Yeah, sure.
It's a bit of tech. But I would like you guys to go and do a little bit of research. Maybe at the next show, whenever that might be, we can talk about
January.
Glass electrolyte batteries. invented by a gentleman by the name of John B. Goodenough.
John B. Goodenough.
You are joking.
No, he's the guy who invented RAM.
Oh, wow.
John B. Goodenough.
He's 97 years old.
Yeah.
And he has just broken the technical world and is explaining to people how to make glass electrolyte batteries.
Is that in this Mochi?
No, but it's going to be in everything in the future.
No, fair enough. I mean, let's do, I mean, we can talk about that now. Let's just finish off with this Mach-E. So good on Ford. I think it kind of shows their drive to become an EV platform business and taking a historical icon into the future. But sadly, like every other SUV, including the Porsche, is not quicker than a Tesla Model S. With ludicrous P100D.
Yeah. There's an interesting backstory to this Mustang SUV thing. 2-3 years ago, when Jim Hackett took over at Ford, he looked at the future product lineup, and they showed him their take on an electric vehicle. And he said, redesign this thing completely. Do something other than a compliance car. Now, a compliance car is basically they have to build and sell a certain number of cars to be compliant with the rules and regulations. Do something better than a compliance car. And then the designers sat down and they thought, okay, what do we have that actually has an identity, a unique identity,
Mustang.
And something that's marketable?
Yeah. Mm.
And they zeroed in on the Mustang. So, before you criticize it too harshly, Lawrence, just think it could have been so much worse.
Yeah, that's very true. And the inside
and
is
worse
beautiful.
Than that.
Yes.
Worse than that is bad.
Exactly.
So inside looks beautiful. It's got a portrait-mounted display, just like the Tesla Model 3.
Yeah.
Because the Model S has a landscape-mounted panel display. This has got a portrait-mounted panel display. The only downside about this this dashboard is that the display seems like it's just bolted on there. It's an afterthought. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the Tesla, it is actually integrated into the dashboard.
I think this is still very much a prototype.
Probably. So hopefully they change that in the future. And then my only other criticism of this car has got too many traditional analog buttons.
Is that a downside though?
Yes.
Really?
Well, I think. You know, we are moving into the software. So let me put it to you this way. The thing about a touchscreen is you can change the configuration, update the software, and you're not limited to this. You're not limited to the configuration that you have in front of you, whereas with analog buttons you are. So now I think the upside to that, you tell me what you think, but the upside to having analog buttons is you don't have to think about it, because once you learn where those buttons are, you can feel where they are.
And there's a level of tactility as well.
That tactile, you know, I know when I drive, I'd say steering wheel buttons always have to be tactile.
Clickety-click.
Yeah. Because you want to keep your eyes on the road, except for when we get to fully autonomous vehicles, it's different. But, you know, if we want to go into the future, as little as possible, minimalist, in terms of actual analog buttons.
Well, I have another point of criticism. Have you seen the roof pillars on this thing?
Oh, the spaghetti.
The Mustang.
What's wrong with them?
Spaghetti.
They're super thin.
Oh, really?
I mean, they're not too thin.
Yeah, I know. So, well, fortunately, there's new technology coming around to remedy that situation.
Yeah, true. I suppose. Well, I mean, good on Ford. I suppose it goes to show they're doing things that are taking us into the future. And that takes us to our final segment today, and for 2019, which is the Grid Talk segment, and we have our resident one dealer Sishe here to tell us how Lewis Hamilton eventually won the championship Formula One Grand Prix for 2019.
So he won in the previous race, but he came out swinging this race. I think this is arguably one of the best this season. It seems like race after race has just been getting better and better. And Brazil was no different. Second last race of the season, and qualifying kicked off as you would expect, with essentially Max Verstappen taking pole position, and behind him was Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton with Charles. And there was a battle here between Max, Charles, and Sebastian Vettel for third. I think there's about 20 points between them. So they all came out swinging, and by the end of the race, when the race finally began, it was just anarchy. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it was just anarchy. There's no other way to put it.
For once, Verkrashten wasn't the cause of the Crashton.
No, he wasn't this time. It was
the two Ferrari drivers.
It was the two Ferraris crashing out. I don't know what you want to say about that, George.
Well, I mean, for me, I don't think it's a non-starter. And the reason I say it's a non-starter is because it was such a light clip that I think they just clipped each other like at that point. Perfect angle, perfect place on the cars, where I've seen cars bump each other harder than that and the tires not get wiped out. So it was almost like a perfect storm. I mean, I don't think it was Vettel's fault. I don't think it was
Charles
Leclerc's fault. I just think it was an unfortunate happening that took them both out of the race.
I raise you this though: 2008, same race. Same part of the track, Vettel versus Webber. Same thing happened.
Exactly the same thing happened.
Exactly.
Interesting.
The same thing happened. And they're also fighting for championship.
Yeah.
Well, for points at least. And Vettel was there also screaming and raging and saying it wasn't his fault. So I don't know.
We'll see. It'll probably rage on for the next month or so until we begin next year.
Yeah. But anyways, just to summarize, so the race ended with Max taking first in an amazing drive.
He deserved it.
You really did. It was a really amazing drive. And then in the last lap, we had a safety car with Hamilton. I think he was in third at the time. And Alex Albon in the other Red Bull decided, you know, he's going to finally come to the party and get a podium. And he was on his way to get it, and unfortunately him and Hamilton collided, which led to Hamilton getting a 5-second penalty, a Toro Rosso, Gasly, taking second, and in third place, Sainz got, you know, updated to
Sainz
to
was
third.
My boy for that race, though. Started in 20th,
finished in third, yeah, it's brilliant.
Well, I'm glad that Gasly and Sainz, got onto the podium, because you don't see those guys on the podium that often.
No.
Pity that, Hamilton, Hamilton was actually on the podium, right?
He was, and then he got the penalty, which took him off the podium.
Which took him off the podium later on, but, you know, it should have been Sainz's show, I suppose.
And Albon. I think Albon deserved to get that second position. We've said it for, like 5 races now that he's probably the most improved driver, I'd say. Mm. He's gotten better and better, and on my fantasy league, he's definitely going to be there next year, because that boy can drive.
So any rumors of driver changes?
Nothing yet. Nothing. It's been really quiet.
It's been very quiet.
Everything's kind of been wrapped up for 2020, but for the next season, 2021, we'll definitely see some shakeups, for sure.
There was a rumor that Haas was courting Kvyat, but I'm not too sure about that.
From Williams?
Yeah, he's not racing for them next year.
Do you think he's good enough to jump into Haas? Haas is a pretty good team, I'd say.
Yeah. Who knows? They're backmarkers. Nobody cares.
Backmarkers is such a derogatory they've got. It's not your fault, Lawrence. It's just everybody's worse. We've always called them backmarkers. I'm there to mark the back.
They could have called them moving chicanes.
Moving chicanes.
That's worse.
Just call them what they are. Poor.
I get this. This is like the last show of the year. It's totally gone pear-shaped. So that was that in the F1. Anything else on that topic, Wandile?
One last race of the season. It's this week. We go to Dubai. Basically, it's always just a showdown of who's got the most money and the glitz of the season. Lots of testing goes down there, so it's worth the watch. To see what we could potentially see next year. But the season is over, so we have to wait 3 months again.
Well, it goes back to its normal 3 o'clock slot, right?
For
Dubai, which I'm glad about.
Definitely.
The America one late at night in South Africa is just it's just painful. Yeah. But so it goes back to its normal afternoon slot. And then if that's it, Wandile, we had the Kyalami 9 hour this weekend. Now, I didn't attend myself, but the likes of Lawrence did. Tell us about this 9 hour and what you thought.
I tell you, it is so nice and so refreshing to have a overseas race series come to our country,
yes,
and show us how it's done.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But in turn, our guys who were racing in the Silver Cup showed the rest of the world, this is how we do a race.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, I was there for the qualifying on Friday. Mm. I got some awesome, awesome photos. I met some of the drivers. I hung out with Porsche. It was really awesome. Mm. I watched the beginning of the race, and I watched the end of the race on Saturday online live streaming because I was somewhere else on a Saturday. But, man, what a race.
What a race,
You know, the last 2 hours of the race, Johannesburg, Highveld, thunder and lightning.
Mm. Oh, remember that
rain
storm on Saturday.
Rain came down. Yeah. It washed everything away. They spent, I think it was an hour and 45 minutes behind the safety car. 15 minutes before the end of the race, safety car pulls off. Mercedes-Benz was leading. They were on track to take the manufacturers and championship. And in the space of 3 laps, the Porsches just came around him like he was looking for pole. Nyum, nyum, nyum. And they won the drivers and manufacturer championship for Intercontinental GC. It was just amazing.
Lovely.
I cannot wait until next year when they come back.
It goes to show that Kyalami is the track. It's worthy of these races. Mm. It looks flawless. Like, the broadcast is so amazing. It just looked world class. It has to come back.
I hope Formula One kind of
I want MotoGP to come. Hello.
Talking about MotoGP, seeing as that is the next topic of discussion and something we'll now be following, because we have a local, Brad Binder, that is moving from Moto2 into MotoGP for KTM Red Bull. So I'm quite excited to begin watching MotoGP next year. I mean, definitely. I followed it like with one eye, over the years, but now I really want to start following old Brad and see how he does. I think
all the best of luck to him.
So well done, Brad Binder. You absolutely deserve some South African support. So let's go out and support Brad Binder. If you're not a MotoGP fan, become a MotoGP fan, because we have a South African on the top.
You just have to
slot.
Watch one race and you'll be hooked.
Yeah, absolutely. So Brad Binder, let's see how he does, and let's try and follow him closely. So well, last words, Wandile?
I don't even know what to say, guys. I'm going to miss you guys so much. No. Just on the circuit.
Oh, no.
You know?
Oh, no.
Boo, gobble, gobble. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Enjoy what are you doing for the holidays?
I'm going to be with family. Family in Durban and up here. So, yeah, lots of family time.
Okay, yeah. Lovely. Lawrence?
Working? Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
The content
stuff.
Monster does not sleep. Yep. It must be fed daily.
So working, I see. Okay. Martin?
Same as Lawrence.
Working.
Same as Lawrence, yeah. Okay. Also, Gauteng's a really nice place around that time of year, because everyone else
all the horrible
is in KZN
leave.
Or in Cape Town sitting in traffic jams in their Fortuners.
Yeah. Okay.
Where do you go, George?
I'm taking probably one of the longest breaks I've taken in 16 years. I never take a break, which you guys know, and this year, I've got a little daughter, so I want to take a good break this time. So I'm taking a good break. I'm not going to tell you where I'm going right now. I'll tell you just before I go, and let's see. So this next song is interesting, and this is what we will play out with. So. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and see you in 2020. CliffCentral.com